Before we start today's episode, we would like to help Reshaping Work, an amazing nonprofit organization based in Amsterdam, to promote an upcoming conference. Ready or not, here it comes.
Early bird tickets for the Reshaping Work 2022 conference are out now. This conference will take place in Amsterdam on October 13th and 14th, and we'll look at how AI and platforms are affecting the way we work. We are gathering companies, startups, policymakers, and academics to come together and jointly discuss the future of work and the ways to shape it. If you want to participate by sending your paper, submit an extended abstract by June 10th. If you do not wish to submit a paper, buy your tickets in the early bird sale now. See you soon in Amsterdam.
Hello, this is Philipp Meyer, welcoming you to another episode of Talking About Platforms. We present and discuss relevant discoveries from the field of platform research.
Hi, I'm Daniel Trabucchi. In every episode, we have a guest sharing with us one of his or her latest papers on platforms to make it accessible for everyone.
And with that, let's jump right into the conversation. Hello, hello. Welcome to Talking About Platforms. Today, we welcome Grace Gu. Hi, Grace. How are you doing?
Hi, Philip. Hi, Daniel. Nice to see you.
Hi, Grace. Course, welcome.
Daniel's also with me. Let me introduce Grace briefly before we jump in. Grace is an assistant professor of information systems at the Carroll School of Management at Boston College. She completed her doctorate in business administration at Harvard Business School, and she regularly publishes her work in top academic journals and already received a couple of awards for her PhD research. And her research is mainly about technology strategy, digitalization and innovation, and platform strategy. Daniel, why don't you kick it off with this exciting guest?
Thank you, Philip. And once again, welcome, Grace, this Thanks. Episode of Talking About Platforms. The first thing that I'd like to ask you is what we are asking to all our guests. You know, all the people coming here and the two of us have one thing in common, which is the platform or the platform world, let's say. And the first thing that I'd like to know from you is, how did you end up here? So how you found out the world of platforms, how you found them on your research path, and even more than that, what is a platform to you?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. I think now we have so many different kinds of platforms, so different people probably understand platform differently. I think to me, now platform is no longer a new concept, but when I was in college, the platform business model was still quite new, right? And when people saw some early stage platforms like eBay, which were doing so successfully, they suddenly started talking about platform as like the next billion-dollar unicorn business model. And everyone started mentioning that platforms might just revolutionize companies around the world. And as a student back then, I just also got super excited about the platform concept. And following that trend, I decided to pursue a PhD to study digital technology and especially platform strategies. That's what leads me here today as a professor in this area. And I think after studying platform for, I would say, many years now, I think my understanding of a platform is basically just an intermediary that connects different parties of users, for example, connecting a consumer and a service provider, and for the two parties to interact in some way through the intermediary, for example, like complete a transaction. And of course, different people have different understanding of platforms, but that's just how I see platforms at this stage.
I think there are as many definitions and understandings as there are people in the field, probably.
Yes.
Talking about platforms as intermediaries, this leads us to the piece that we want to talk about and discuss today. And the title of the piece is Trust and Disintermediation, Evidence from an Online Freelance Marketplace. It is written by Grace and by Feng Su, published in Management Science in 2021, very recent piece. Grace, why don't you introduce us and our listeners to your work?
Yeah, sure. So this paper is a major part of my research pipeline that looks at platform business models. As we all know, and it is also already well known in the platform literature, that for a platform to start and also to grow its business, basically the platform first needs to build enough trust between the consumer and the service provider so that the two sides are willing to transact on the platform. However, in this piece, we realize that as a platform builds user trust to facilitate the matching and transactions on the platform, it actually also faces this increasing risk of disintermediation. That is, when the user trust between the two sides is sufficiently high, the consumer and the service provider may actually circumvent the platform and transact by themselves to avoid the service fee or the commission fee charged by the platform. So this is kind of like the platform's revenue is leaked out of the platform. So disintermediation is also called platform leakage in some business practice. And clearly, it's a big issue to the platform. That's why I think this paper would touch on a very important topic. So with this risk of disintermediation, the platform faces a puzzle. That is, if the platform keeps using different features or different designs to build user trust, it might also lead to higher risk of disintermediation. Then is it actually optimal, or should platforms keep increasing trust? What is the impact of user trust on a platform's disintermediation risk? So that is basically the research question of the study. And to study the question, we leveraged a randomized control trial on a major online freelance marketplace in the US, where the platform basically rolled out a new and improved reputation system to the users to help build trust between the consumers and service providers on the platform. When we try to observe the transaction outcomes and also try to observe the disintermediation tendencies between the treatment and control group users, we surprisingly find that after increasing trust between the users, the users are significantly more likely to disintermediate. And this is especially true among the high-quality service providers. So such an evidence basically shows that although the platform does benefit from the good side of improving trust, for example, improving trust increases the likelihood of high-quality service providers to be hired by the consumers, but such expected revenue gain from these benefits are actually offset by the increase in disintermediation. So basically, the platform did not see revenue gain from its efforts to roll out new reputation systems. So these are really our main findings. And after observing this increase in disintermediation, we, in the paper, also tried to identify a few contributing factors that would make the effect greater. For example, if the service provider and the consumer are geographically near each other, it's more likely for the two trusted parties to disintermediate. And similarly, if the job or the task on the platform is easily divisible, meaning it can be easily divided into subtasks, it's still easier for the two parties to go offline and transact by themselves. And also if the consumer, not just the service provider, but also the consumer themselves also have high ratings, which helps build trust, it would also lead to greater tendencies of user disintermediation that's a result from higher user trust. So with this piece, we are really hoping that platforms can be aware of this possibly side effect or potential consequence from building user trust that all the other literature has been suggesting platforms should do. And we hope that platforms can have some takeaway from the piece on their future investment strategies and platform design strategies. So that's basically the main content.
Thank you very much, Grace. I went through the paper and I found it very, very interesting. And your presentation, I guess, was capturing exactly the main essence, the main points that anyone should be aware of approaching your paper. And what you said at the very last is exactly what I thought when I read it. I actually found in my own work of research the role that trust plays in setting up the platform. So it emerged as one of the main value creation drivers on the platform side. I don't know if you ever heard this this French startup. It's called BlaBlaCar. Mm-hmm. It's you know it. It's a service that helps people to find someone else to have a ride going somewhere in the region, let's say. And they created this very interesting framework that is called the Dreams Framework that is actually putting trust at the center. So one of the main things they promise to users is that going through the platform, they can trust the other side, you know, going on a stranger car. And while you were talking, I was kind of thinking, do you think there is, I don't know, a relationship between the stage of the industry, the phase, the maturity phase the industry is in or the company is in, and a sort of link with the role that the trust can play?
Yeah. That's actually a great point. I think for platforms, especially two-sided matching platforms, definitely the stage of the platform matters. For example, as I mentioned, in the early stage of a platform, building trust is essential to its growth for the platform to grab attention and to grab its initial user base. And I would say in that stage, from my talks, conversations with practitioners, they mainly care a lot about building trust and instead of paying too much attention on disintermediation. But for established firms, established platforms, it's more likely that the goal is switched to maintaining existing users. And at that stage, building trust is, of course, still important, but the platform cares a lot more about maintaining users and keeping them on the platform. And also, as Daniel mentioned, especially if a platform is already established, it likely has a very good user reputation system or feature designs that can help the two sides trust each other. And the platform itself already becomes a brand, right? Like for BlaBlaCar, users on the platform would naturally believe that the platform has done a good job filtering and checking the security or making sure that the transactions would be reliable. And they would naturally pass down this trust to the other party that is transacting with him or herself. And in that situation, disintermediation is more likely to happen, right? Because users think, now that I trust this person so much and the fact that they are on this really well-known platform, I can naturally think I can just directly transact with this other party by ourselves. And this becomes a dilemma again, right? If the platform becomes so successful in terms of creating value during the matching and during facilitating transactions, its value capture actually becomes harder, right? The users no longer need the platform to facilitate the transaction, to guarantee some certain uncertainties don't happen. In that sense, they are more likely in the later stage disintermediate. So yeah, as Daniel mentioned, it's exactly right that platforms face this dilemma and they are so puzzled. Why, when we become so successful, it actually becomes harder to capture the value. And that's also why I think with this study, we're trying to give some implications on the possible solutions of how platforms might redesign some of their functions, or at least consider these factors in their management decisions to lower the risk of disintermediation.
Very interesting. What I'd like to better understand is, why did you pick these digital contracting work platforms as a case study, right? Because I think, especially for this disintermediation, the type of a transaction good and the transaction itself on this platform being like digital, a high number, probably a high frequency of transactions, a very, very fragmented supply and a very, very fragmented demand side. So were these all factors that you've put into consideration when you like choose this like field or case study as a target? And what other platforms would be, in your opinion, interesting comparisons where it's maybe different, but similar mechanisms could apply or not?
Yeah, absolutely. So this platform definitely has a lot of unique characteristics that would help with the study. For example, as Philip mentioned, on this platform, there's a large variety of job categories. So there are basically programming jobs, which can be easily divisible, which are modular, whereas there are also jobs that are like designing a logo, which is basically a whole piece. And this variety of tasks would give us as researchers a really good advantage of observing some heterogeneity effects of disintermediation as a result from trust. And I think another reason is that there's actually a great opportunity of studying trust on this platform, because this platform is one of the largest freelancing marketplace. And because it was entering its mature stage of business, they will suffer from this issue of lack of user trust, right? Because the platform was using the traditional 5-star ratings before the study. And as we all know, 5-star ratings are super inflated and very flawed. Because, for example, if you check out, say, Uber ratings or Amazon ratings, you'll see basically everyone was getting like a 4.9 or 5.0 stars. And with that 5-star rating system, it is very hard to distinguish which service provider is better or of high quality, whereas other service providers who might have lower quality still have like a 4.9 on their profile. And users on the platform started wondering, well, can I still trust this reputation system or trust the other party from the profile rating? So that's why the platform at the point was wondering, well, should we roll out this improved reputation system to help distinguish users with the goal of helping building user trust? And after that, maybe users might find it more attractive to work on the platform and we might see an increase in our transaction volume. And at that point, I was like, maybe there could be a consequence or a side effect that might come along with building user trust. And actually, there's another interesting behind-the-scenes story when I was picking this company, because when I was a PhD student, I was trying to become an intern at the company to gain some experience. And when I went to the local region of the company, I stayed at an Airbnb. And at that time, because the internship was going to be like more than a month or so, so renting an Airbnb for a long term would actually cost you a lot of money. So I only booked 1 week on Airbnb. And after a week, the host was like, I think you're a really good guest. And I know that you're doing internship. Are you considering like renting my place for a longer term without using Airbnb? So at that point, to me, I thought, wow, that could actually save me quite some money. Because the transaction fee on Airbnb was, I think, at the stage like 15% or something. So when it becomes long-term renting, the commission fee could become quite high. And I thought it's totally natural for the two parties to avoid the service fee without letting Airbnb know, right? But also, as I was thinking about the internship, I thought this definitely is also happening to the freelancing company. And the company might even suffer this more because, as I mentioned, the jobs are so divisible. And also its users are also from different geographical regions. Some of them could be located very closely. And if the two sides say, if you hire a service provider that is just right next door or in the same neighborhood, it is very likely that if you have this plumber coming over to your room to fix something and then you realize he or she is really good, it's very likely you'll just ask for the number. And next time you encounter some issues at home, you'll just call up the number and then have the plumber come again. And in that case, it is possibly even more likely to have disintermediation on the platform. So I thought, well, that's a great research topic for me to study. And that's basically how I decided on studying this topic at the platform.
That's cool. That's a nice story when, you know, real life meets the research life and you end up in this multiverse world.
Yes.
I was wondering, well, listening to your story, thinking about Airbnb and these kind of experiences that all of us has when you are not with the researcher hat, but you go with the user hat. If we go back and we pretend to be talking to managers, people designing platforms, what may be, in your opinion, factors that could help the platform provider, the platform creator, to actually be still meaningful in a repeated transaction, or anyhow to keep customers that already met? How can they enhance the probability for them to stay there once trust is, you know, given for granted and is not a differentiating factor anymore?
Yeah, sure. I think for platforms to create more value and also be able to capture value at different stages, there are ways that the platform can consider like redesigning their business model or maybe putting in some new features. For example, for a two-sided matching platform as the one I'm studying in the paper, usually the platform's business model involves two stages, like the first stage of matching. And then after the two sides are matched, the second stage is to facilitate the transaction. And accordingly, a platform can have basically two ways to improve its value creation and value capture. So the first way is to improve its value capture in the matching stage. So there are some platforms trying to monetize or trying to capture value from the matching. For example, there are platforms trying to charge users whenever, say, the service provider is applying to a job. So that charge happens even before the transaction actually started. So in that way, the platform can sustain its business model from revenues from the matching stage. And that would make disintermediation maybe less of an issue. Whereas there are other platforms that can consider capturing value from the transaction stage. So for example, after the two sides are matched and a contract or a task is already started, the platform can consider offering additional value, like new features, for example, helping monitoring the job. Like on the platform that I'm studying, they have features such as screenshots of job progress, and also the platform helps with dealing with disputes among users. And of course, many platforms does say background checking, or they also provide even free training sessions on helping the users learn how to communicate and manage a job, or helping the consumers learn how to do quality control, or how to communicate, how to contact and keep track of the progress of the service provider. So these additional services would create additional value to the users. And the platform can use these features to capture value in the transaction stage. And of course, there are platforms that can eventually just increase its value capture from both stage. For example, platforms, once they become a brand and people just trust it so well, some users would care about some reputational benefits on the platform. And even service providers like freelancers would care about their career in the long term, even trying to make a career out of their jobs on the platform. Then naturally, the users in the long term will be more sticky and will have more incentive to stay on the platform. So at that point, if a client or a consumer suggests to take the transaction outside, the service provider might still want to stick to the platform. So I think there are many ways that platform can try to monetize its value capture.
Yeah, that makes very, very sense. Thank you, Grace.
Yeah, super, sure. Super valuable strategies. You talked about the inflation of the star systems and the ratings and everything around that. And I was wondering, like, what are other like ways of platforms how to signal the long-term or expected long-term quality of a collaboration with a potential user on the other side of the platform without relying too much on these rating systems?
Yeah, I think for some platforms, what they're doing is that they try to also analyze and observe its service providers. And after observing for some time, they're able to distinguish who are the higher quality service providers. And one thing they can do is that they separate these users to like another group or to a separate platform even. Sometimes they can be called like as talent cloud or maybe some talent groups. And these users, these service providers are basically featured on the platform, or they receive different training, or they receive different benefits as they work on the platform. So the other side, the consumers can also observe that. And when consumers go look for better quality or even the best quality service providers on the platform, they would be able to distinguish and identify these talents that the platform recommends. And I think that's a very direct way of signaling or even directly separating out these top users, top service providers on the platform. And I think once these top service providers become very loyal to the platform, they are exactly the service providers that a platform would want to keep, to attract. And they usually generate the most value to the platform compared to maybe lower or less frequently users. And in that sense, this business model transition is also a good way for the platform to keep generating value and to keep the best talent on the platform. So the benefits become mutual, right? The best users would also, the best service providers would gain benefit, and they would gain long-term advantages and long-term even career benefits from the platform, whereas the platform can maintain its essential user base and build up its brand. So I think that's one strategy that I saw, which is really useful in terms of signaling the quality of service providers.
That's very, very insightful. Thank you. And then it also fits very well with the finding of your piece that it's very important to keep these like high quality users because they are the ones that are disintermediating a lot, right?
Yes.
So as a platform, you have to grow them, you have to support them, but you also have to really work on keeping them. And I think this is another great takeaway here.
Exactly.
That's cool. Thank you very much for bringing us in your world, in your research with this chat. You know, at the beginning, we asked you, what is a platform in your opinion, how you enter in the world of platforms? And the reason why we are asking this to all our guests is because, as you said, all of us studying platforms is, you know, leveraging different definitions, is taking slightly different perspectives. But in the end, we are all talking about this business model that is changing market after market, industry after industry, established company after established company. And there are many debates, many phenomena related to the world of platforms. And even though we cannot foresee the future, we do know that if we go back 5 years, the world was pretty different. So what if you try to look ahead? What's the future of platforms, in your opinion? What's, I don't know, the relevant topics? Where are we going? What are the next things that you're interested in? What's in the future of platforms?
Yeah, sure. I think, as Daniel mentioned, because platform as a business model has been growing so fast in the past years, we've seen so many giants or leaders in their industries becoming platforms. And that's also a good opportunity for researchers like us to study platforms, right? So I think as a researcher, from a research perspective, we have been very fruitful in terms of platform study in the past years. And also thanks to many brilliant works from a large community of platform scholars, I think we are now already have very good understanding of the fundamental economics behind the platform business model. But that said, I think in practice, for platform managers and platform owners, they are still nowadays very curious about why some platforms thrive, whereas others fail. And as now, platforms are taking more and more different formats, and I think in future there will be more emerging new types of platforms, which are hybrids or combination of more complex versions of platform models, managers would still really need some findings or guidelines on how to systematically build a successful platform. So I think in this sense, it's good news that our research on platform will still be very valuable to platform managers and platform owners in the sense to guide their future practice. And also, I think from a theoretical point of view, as researchers, in future, I am personally interested in seeing more study on inter-platform dynamics. So mainly, we are now familiar with the dynamics within a platform, like building a platform, helping the platform grow. But it would be interesting to see inter-platform dynamics like platform merger and acquisition, how different platforms, especially giant platforms, exchange resources, how that would help even build an ecosystem or transition the entire industry, so on and so forth. I think that would be an interesting direction for future researchers to go, and of course, for practitioners that would be relevant to them as well. So I am personally very optimistic about the future of platforms.
I'm sure about that. And as in a proper journal article, we also end with this potential path for future research and future interests. And with that, before we close, where can people find you and more about your work if they're now interested in reading more about it, learning more about you? What's the best way?
Thanks. You can feel free to check out my personal website. And also, I'll just keep working on platform topics along the direction of, say, disintermediation and some broader topics on platform strategies. So if anyone in future is interested in this topic as well, I'm always open and welcome to chat on either on Twitter, via my email, or just send me a message, leave a message on my personal webpage, things like that. I would always love to interact with you in future. And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, really great. We will link this in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talking About Platforms. To support our work, you can rate the episode or leave a comment on your favorite podcast app.
And don't forget to hit the follow button so you don't miss out on the coming episodes. If you want to look up at the papers we have discussed or other topics we addressed, visit talkingaboutplatforms.com. There you can find the show notes and get in touch with us.
Until next time, when we're again talking about platforms.